It's poverty.
It's crime.
Unemployment.
Corruption.
Accountability.
The energy crisis.
Inflation.
We are worried.
That South Africa has myriad problems on all fronts is a given. But the time has come for us to look for real solutions. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and this MoneyWeb podcast will discuss those solutions on how South Africans can solve problems by having tough conversations and drawing on the insights of South Africa's top business leaders. Welcome to Fix SA. Soon after the May election, a group of civil society foundations linked to some of the most prominent South African struggle stalwarts called for what was termed a national dialogue to discuss the country's future. And one of those people was the chairperson of the Thabo Mbeki Foundation, Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi. If you remember the name, had spent a long time in government. And she is my guest today. Geraldine, a very warm welcome. It's so good to hear your voice again. So let's dive straight into this national dialogue that is getting a fair amount of traction. How do you envision the structure and process of such an initiative?
Thank you and good afternoon, Jeremy. So this particular national dialogue very much came about through President Thabo Mbeki doing his 30-year reflections on the state of our democracy. And he outlined quite a number of issues. And it was very clear from that our country is in quite a difficult situation right now. And the intention was to look towards what we could do to really make a difference. How could we change this around? Because the one thing would be to lament the current reality, or we could take an approach that says we've got to do something about it. He addressed all the national foundations. And through that engagement, it was clear that as national foundations, we would make a call to all South Africans on a national dialogue in order that we could imagine and create the South Africa we want. So when I say we, it's not we as the national foundations. Our role was to make the call, but it's we, the people of South Africa, as captured in our constitution. We're in the process now of, through a small secretariat, pulling together what the key areas are. But you are aware through the dialogue, we had already identified some of those, and as well as the phases, you know, to conceptualize and plan what is required to take this forward, to look at the commencement and so on. But we're also very clear that it's not something that belongs to the national foundations. It's not something that we want to push separately. It's got to belong to the whole of government and to the whole of society. So ordinary people must see themselves as part of this and see what comes out of this process reflected in the national development plan.
Ideally, Geraldine, what should come out of the process?
Ideally, it should be one that deals with certain broad areas, the reality of inequality in South African society and how we'll overcome that, looking at growing our economy in order that we can deal with the whole issue of joblessness and unemployment, and it requires creative thinking. Thirdly, looking at national cohesion and how do we overcome what's seen as almost a brokenness in society, whether you talk about femicide, whether you talk about high levels of crime, and so on. And also being able to fix what has gone quite wrong in society as a whole. So that's what we'd like to see come out of it, in addition to everything else. I mean, we want to promote peace, security, democracy, socioeconomic development, and so on. We'd want to even reflect on you know, what should be the foreign policy outlook of our country? But that needs to be done through a structure outside of the national foundations. And here, some of the thinking is pointing towards a tripartite or a body that's been involved in compacting and social compacting, and that would be a structure such as NEDLAC and probably the NEDLAC Executive Committee, with a big challenge of bringing on board the voices of ordinary South Africans wherever they are.
Geraldine, ideally a structure like this works in tandem with the Government of National Unity, but you would point out a concern, I imagine, should such a process start running in parallel and even counter to it. So it's critical that both government and an initiative like this are charting exactly the same course.
Absolutely, but that's why I spoke about a whole of government type approach, as well as a whole of society approach, because if the two don't work together, it will be majorly problematic, because already a government of national unity, the size of which we have in South Africa, is hugely complex, and we have to bring them on board. And fortunately, when you look at the statement of intent that serves as the framework of a GNU, there is a reference to the need for a national dialogue. But it's not just the national dialogue that's open-ended and goes nowhere and a collection of thoughts. It very clearly got to link back into government and at critical moments feed into the strategic priority setting of government. And already we are aware of the fact that right now there has been a Lekgotla that looked at the medium-term strategic framework, and they need to deal with the complexity of integrating what comes out of the GNU into what the strategic priorities are, because the current priorities, I think, were set up to whether it's the end of 2025 or thereafter. So it's almost midstream that they've got to change gears to look at what the needs are now in building what's been identified by government as a capable, ethical, and developmental state.
Geraldine, on paper it sounds wonderful, but is there not a danger of an initiative like this just creating another layer almost of ideas or ideological complexity?
That's where the planning and structuring of it is going to be so important. And as you pointed out, Jeremy, where there's got to be linkages with government and with the Government of National Unity. Obviously, Parliament also needs to play a role at some stage. And look, it's not something that is unknown to us. And I can give a couple of examples. Let me look at a more recent one. Or let's think back 30 years. If you look at the Constituent Assembly that resulted in the writing and adoption of our constitution, our 1996 constitution, that went through a massive consultation process. And a lot of that found its way into the Bill of Rights and all. And mind you, there was a subcommittee that looked at framing and drafting, filtering through what's come out of such a process and integrating that into a constitution. So that's one process. A second and more recent one, and we can always do that better, is the whole African peer review mechanism, which is quite a unique process where you have a report that looks at, I think it's about four key areas. it looks at the whole issue of what the socioeconomic challenges are in the country. It looks at the whole area of corporate governance and so on. And through that, a country report is drafted. So you have a government report and a country report. And having been at the time, the minister was the focal point for the APRM when we did our first report, we actually went to provinces and communities to get the views of people on both the national development plan at that point in time, as well as provincial development plans. And, you know, those reports that fed back on the African peer review mechanism weren't always reports that were simply flattering to government. It raised real issues and problems and proposed solutions. We may not have listened to all of that, some to our own detriment at the end of the day, but that was a consultative process that took form through a report that was done at a Africa level. And this report was evaluated by peers. Here we're saying, let's have this process at a national level and let's feed it into our government processes. But let's also feed it back to civil society. Because when you look at the issue of building national cohesion, we need to have all sectors of society involved, where, for example, the interfaith community has a very strong role to play. We also have other sectors of society that must help with dealing with the deep-seated trauma in South African society and look at very catalytic ways of healing South Africa and its communities. And you're right, it's complex. Mm.
Geraldine,
it sounds easier talking about.
Well, it probably does, but and we all know that South Africa has a great aptitude and skill for sitting around a table and entering into dialogue. But I'm just wondering to myself how you sell a concept like this to an impatient South African who wants their social grant paid on time, or they want water running into their homes. And I'd suggest to you that maybe the biggest problem in this idea of a fix is the inertia and apathy of South African voters. And the numbers speak for it. 16 million out of 40 million eligible voters only participating in the last election. Surely that's your biggest problem.
That is a big problem, but that's why we need to find a solution. Mm. Because to a large extent, that reflects a lack of public trust and confidence, and we need to look at how we rebuild that. So on the one hand, absolutely correct. We need to ensure that basic services are delivered more effectively to communities. And for that, the public service and public sector has got to get their act together to do even better than they've ever done at any point in time. And the whole call of people first must be made a reality. So we've got to tackle the issue of improving service delivery. We've got to ensure that our social safety net works and work well. So we must improve access to basic services and improve the quality of basic services. So all of that has got to be done. And while government is working on that, we're saying parts of government must work with broader society to get a discussion going where we rebuild hope in our country. So I have, and I've said this in recent times, I've sort of turned a lot to Antonio Gramsci. Mm. And Antonio Gramsci talks about the pessimism of the intellect and the optimism of will. And this is what we need to work on, the optimism of will of South African people, where we say, don't see this as a talk shop. See this as a necessary part to contribute towards change in our DNA and fabric of society in order for us to make the founding provisions of our constitution a reality. You know?
And do you think that optimism that you speak about still exists in South Africa, or are people by and large either just more pessimistic or have simply just retreated into a bubble of existence?
Look, we've gone through a very difficult period, and it's been compounded by COVID-19. It's been compounded by the impact of COVID-19 on an already struggling economy with negative growth and all. And all that has to be turned around. But in order for that to happen, we need leaders in all sectors of society to start speaking out positively. So we can't only hear the negative stories. We also need more of the good news stories to come through. But as that comes through, it's also the issue of South Africans saying, look, we work together to build this democracy of ours. Things have gone wrong, but the way we were able to come together from all corners of this country and say, we're not going to continue under apartheid. We're not going to remain oppressed because the oppressor has got such a well-oiled military and constitutional machine. We resisted that even when the odds are great. Right now, the biggest challenge is to rebuild. The biggest challenge, and this is to the youth as well, let's get the glimmers of hope coming through, and everyone needs to be part of shaping that optimism.
Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi, you are a long-serving politician. You are a respected member of civil society. Where do you still find the optimism to become part of an initiative like this? On a personal note.
On a personal note, you know, Jeremy, I've always said, if those of us who have been in positions of leadership, are able to participate in various activities in society, if we become pessimistic, we shouldn't expect anyone who probably doesn't have a plate of food tonight to find optimism. We've got to make a difference and say that we can change this, and we must change sort of negative feeling and reality. Let's turn the mood around, and let's turn the mood around through practical actions.
Let's assume, Geraldine, that this national dialogue that you refer to starts to gather momentum, that it becomes a real part of fixing South Africa. What would constitute, in your opinion, short-term wins? I was speaking to a political commentator earlier today, Dr. T.K. Puer from the Wits School of Governance, who was talking about the cabinet Lekgotla and the importance of achieving some demonstrable successes in the short term to demonstrate that we're on the right way, on the right path. What, in your opinion, would demonstrate success in terms of this national dialogue? Not long term, but, you know, in 6 to 12 months.
We've got to ensure that there's provision of basic services, and this includes access to electricity and water, uninterrupted access. So maintenance programs and all should be dealt with. We've got to ensure that we, in a real practical sense, improve our healthcare infrastructure, employ more people in the health sector, ensure that we get basic things right, like just, you know, the way in which you manage your lines at hospitals and so on, you know, basic things. What do they say? Create a single electronic health record and so on. We must improve education and ensure that it makes a difference. And on the other side, as we invest into some of the development initiatives, we'll also deal and should be dealing with issues of crime. So in essence, we're saying to public servants, do your job and do it well. You are there, you weren't brought in as volunteers, you're working and you're part of the most important machinery of the state. The public servants, do your jobs and be accountable for it. And if everybody is seen to work in their areas and they're held accountable, not only by their managers, but even by family members, that's going to make a difference, you know? And it's critical. We've made that call. It's critical that that happens. And then, of course, you know, let's talk out in mosques, in synagogues, in churches and all about the need to change society. Let's deal with the violence that's there in society and let's say that we'll have no tolerance for that. So it's some of this is small, you know, and it requires basic things. So are the traffic cops doing what they should and not be associated with taking bribes? Do we see them doing it practically? Are the people in home affairs even improving the way in which, both in terms of speed in turnaround on the provision of documentation and otherwise, the people who issue the SASSA grants, is it seen that this is done with the compassion required for the people who are receiving these grants? And this is not only pensioners, it's also everyone else that's part of our social safety nets. And then when it comes to dealing with catastrophes, and mind you, we must stop reacting as though every time when there's weather-related problems or there's a tornado, it's another crisis. We must build risk into our planning and programming so that we can respond to it. But there's also a community response that accompanies the government response. And we've always done that. So, you know, it's almost a culture change, a mindset change.
You're giving us a very useful blueprint of what the future could look like. How do you convince ordinary South Africans, many of whom are tired, who've given up, that another effort such as the one that you're outlining is actually worth it?
You know, Jeremy, I sometimes think it's not the ordinary South Africans that are the problem. It's the chattering classes. If you go and sit down with a woman in Aiduchwa or in Leboa Homo, they may be more ready to be part of this change because that's about their very existence. Whilst you and I, who can opt out, will complain all the time. And we can opt out of the public system and opt for private education, private health care, and so on. That woman in rural South Africa doesn't have that option, or even the woman or man in the township. So they may be more open to it than the chattering classes.
Specifically, and we are coming to the end of this conversation, Geraldine, specifically, what role do you believe the business community has to play in all of this? Now, I understand that it's not just about the foundations, that it's a broad church that is being invited into this auditorium of change. But we also know that the business community is good at talking up a storm, but often not acting with the necessary alacrity that it should.
You know, the first thing the business must do is what they should do well. Contribute towards growth of the economy and working on domestic investment. For too long, the business community is held back and not sufficiently invested in the economy because they were playing the wait and see game. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen going forward. So I'll rather sit on cash than investing. And if we don't have sufficient investment through domestic capital investment. Why should we have foreign direct investment? So that's one thing they should do. And then, of course, secondly, instead of getting involved in trying to run a shadow government, do what you must do well and support those programs of government that should be supported. And I would argue very strongly, support the social programs. Get out of the security sector, because people will say the one who pays the piper calls the tune. Invest in education. We want better quality education. Invest in our social programs as is required. Build on the whole social economic development programs and ensure that you help support and create small businesses. Invest in those areas. Don't try and get into politics. Do what you must do well. Grow the economy from the point of view of the private sector. And there are, of course, public-private partnerships on large infrastructure and all that we need patriots in the private sector to invest into to make a difference. We've got enough politicians. Look at the size of the GNU. We don't need any more.
And let me ask you one last question based on that answer. What about Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi? Are you thinking of making a bigger return to public life at some point? You're very committed to this idea of the national dialogue. What role are you going to play?
I can play a role wherever I'm located. It doesn't only need to be in public office. If you do your role well, wherever you're located, you make a contribution.
Do you miss politics, though?
There may well be moments, yeah.
Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi, thank you very much for joining me on this edition of Fix SA on MoneyWeb. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this Fix SA podcast. For more episodes posted every second Friday, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.